everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. And we're really in the back end of the year now. And this was the last round of Coates League before we have that final few weeks where everyone is back at full strength right before finals. And it was a pretty good week of footy and things are really shaping up on the ladder. It's becoming pretty tight at the top for the boys and the girls. A really good top end of talent. But we're going to start with the boys as per usual. And Jonty, you were at Box Hill for Eastern Western. But yeah, it looks like Eastern got the job done pretty comfortably.
Yeah, they did. And there are a lot of players that really shone in that game, led by Christian Moraes and Lockie Doverston. Lockie Doverston kicking four goals, recast as a small forward. It's a different role for him to what I've seen him play before. He's obviously done it a couple of times now, but he really looks like he's got the perfect skill set to be that small forward. So I'm interested to see what position they do use him in next year and how he does develop. Obviously, he looks like he's going to be that first round draft pick if things are all equal, and I guess the 2025 draft is held tomorrow. But it's an interesting position for him because he's got that natural goal sense. You wouldn't pick that he's played in defense for so much of the year, and he kicked four goals, three, and yeah, got all over his opponent, is able to find space and has so many different avenues to goal. And Christian Moraes in the midfield, he was back to his scintillating best. We've probably seen it in spurts this year without seeing it for a full game. We have seen it for a full game, but we haven't necessarily seen that consistent block from him that we are so accustomed to. So it was good to see him kick five goals. We know his point of difference is hitting the scoreboard. And yeah, every time he got it, it looked like something was going to happen. They were the two big standouts from an Eastern perspective. Xavier Taylor as well, a bottom ager, played a real breakout game in defence, taking the five intercept marks and looking like he was going to cut off anything that came into that Ford 50 for the Western Jets.
Well, I want to ask you about a specific player on the Jets, being Tom McGuan, and the 17s have their trials games to play on AFL Grand Final Day, that main futures games. But the trials are this week. We don't have the list yet, but we will review that next week. But you kept a keen eye on Tom McGuan. I guess break down what you saw, because we know he's talented, but I guess what are his real points of differences? And even in his bottom age year, how is he expressing those?
Yeah, he's one that I've watched five or six times now. It's probably been a couple of times where he's flown under my radar. So when it looked like it was going to be a blowout margin, I thought he's one I wanted to keep an eye on. A, because I want to see how it would go. But B, when the game is sort of out of control and it didn't look like there was any chance Western were going to win, what's his attitude and body language going to look like? And he really impressed me. So it's not necessarily the touches he get. He finished with the 26, but it's just some of the skills and the smarts that he's got. So he's one who I noticed in the first half in particular. Western kicked a lot of goals and a lot of behinds, or not as many as Eastern clearly, but he was always in a better position and he was rarely used, but he always found space inside 50. His running patterns are so smart and he's always on the move when the ball's in his vicinity, when the ball's not in his vicinity. He's trying to get to the next contest to really impact, and he's trying to get forward of the ball to get in a smart position to provide that outnumber inside 50 and provide a goal scoring option. And he also runs hard defensively. He locates his man, and that's something that the Jets at times probably weren't great at on the day, but I thought he did that quite well. And then around stoppage, he's very smart in that he's clearly a more slightly built player. He's playing on some players that have a bit more strength than him, but he's able to almost use his opponent's strength against them, push off them, and then hit the fall of the ball at speed. He's really clean below his knees, and then he's able to distribute very effectively. So he's one that Collingwood fans should watch with great interest going forward, because his intelligence is there. He's got that real footballer's footballer mentality about him. And when he puts on a bit of size, it's going to round him out really nicely. He's already put on size quite visibly from where he was in preseason. So he's building really nicely, the son of Collingwood's Mick McGuan, and a Kilo legend as well. So he's one who I watch quite closely for the Jets. Others, Darcy Weeks was okay as well. He was pretty good in defence, particularly early. West Barker provided a little bit. And Aidan McCarroll, one to keep an eye on. 208 centimetres he is up forward, and he kicked four goals, took some really big grabs, and was on debut, and certainly would have captured some attention just with that ability to take an overhead mark at his size.
208. That's massive.
Yeah, huge. And he's a bottom major clearly as well. So, yeah, but we will keep an eye on that game this week, that futures game that you talk about. There's a few Eastern Rangers that will be in action. Well, there are a few players from every team. But, yeah, it's going to be a good day for them to really show their weapons. I'll move on to the Gippsland versus GWV game, which you were at. You were really high on Ollie Hannaford's game, and that seemed to be the real storyline out of the day. Two goals and 16 disposals. It doesn't jump off the page, but it was some other things that impressed you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've always been a big fan of Ollie, and I guess I've had just question marks about size. Where does he fit in at the next level? But I just don't think you can look past his tenacity. It is unbelievable. The off-ball efforts he produces that, if they're not causing a stoppage, they're causing turnovers. There's those little things like that. And yes, like you said, 16 and 2 doesn't really scream off the page, but I feel like every touch was, again, impactful. His work rate from, you know, up and down the ground, like he's not just implanted in that forward half. He moves back as well. He moved into the midfield rotations and two goals. He's a goal-scoring threat. And if I take a look quickly, from memory, he's pretty much, he's hit the scoreboard. He's kicked two goals in his last three games. So he's a consistent scoring threat. And he was so impressive, I thought, just was able to elevate himself to that next level. And not that he's ever kind of dropped off this year, but it feels like he continues to take his footy to the next level.
Yeah, certainly. Tell us about some of the other Rebels that shone, because it was a pretty commanding performance.
Yeah, they were up by 42 points early into the third quarter, and Gippy kind of came back, but never got on a run more than four goals, I think. But Jonty Fall kicked three goals, but all in the first 17 minutes. Now, if I was to be pretty critical of his game, I guess the one thing I'd question at the moment is how good is he when he really has to battle one-on-one? And this isn't like, you know, he's one-on-one and there's space around him, as in it's a contest. He's been like really held down. He did struggle a bit. When he's not getting separation, he does struggle to impact in the contest. He did kick 3-3, so he did have scoring shots after the first quarter, but wasn't able to convert a major again. Reggie Mast was pretty good for the Rebels. I thought his forward pressure was there all day, a really solid figure, and he ended up with two goals. And Jacko is the one that I think I want to highlight a little bit, who, you know, he's played on the outside a lot of his, for the majority of this year, he's played as a win role. But he was put into the inside, and I thought he was spectacular. I think his size and build really fits that mold. And I think I said to you, he's almost the same role as a Smiley. He just doesn't have the size, but he's still quite built. But he was so prominent. His hands were really clean out of that center stoppage. He was good up forward as well. I mean, he kicked a goal of his own, and it was just his forward pressure and general hunt around the footy that I really enjoyed. And I feel like even when he has his low patches, he really builds himself up nicely again to impact later on.
Yeah, and I mentioned to you a few days ago when we were having a chat about this, it's got the Colin Pauls about it, where Colin Paul is a player who only played the one game for Vic Country, but Murray quite like it, and he might be one that could be a smoky on draft night if he does produce some good footy in the last bit of the season. But he has played a lot of his footy on the wing this year because they want to show his overhead marking. But when he goes on the inside, it looks like he's able to really impose himself on the game, and it looks a lot more natural to him. So both similar builds, both similar strengths, and both can go on the inside is a nice package as well. I want to touch on Harry Canning. I think you said he was his direct opponent, Jonty Fall's direct opponent, that is, and he was able to bring him back nicely after a concerning start. He's actually had a pretty productive season down back, Harry Canning.
Yeah, well, it did look pretty concerning early on when we know what he's like. He can just like turn it on in a matter of minutes. But he held him down really well. His physicality improved and he was able to shut him down. It didn't feel like he was in a lot of free space at all, Jonty Fall, after quarter time. He really had to work for his ground position, and he was awesome. I just want to quickly touch on Archie Caldo. That was a great performance from him because he was in my five, so it makes no sense if I don't touch on him. But back to Canning. Yeah, just thought the way he was able to improve and not let his head down a lot after a poor start where it could have been a 5 or 6 goal performance from Jonty, he really turned it on, and it's good to see him just lock down a really strong key forward as well.
And tell us about some of the other Gippy players, because they're throwing around the magnets a little bit at Gippy. So Asher Easton playing some time in defence, Ricky Mentha spending some time in defence, Alexander Tarrou has been that interceptor, but he's played some other positions as well. So what did you see from them?
Yeah, it was interesting. You're right. It was almost a double-check the numbers kind of game where you have to see, is that actually who I think it is? But Asher Easton was my number one in the end in terms of his productivity down back. He took a few good intercept marks. He was physically commanding down back and always seemed to put his body on the line for any ball that came in a contest mark. You know, he was equally as valuable as Harry Canning in that sense, where they were able to shut down the tools and not give him opportunity to fly at it. Alex Tarrou played time up forward and definitely needed to be more accurate. final assessment, because he was quite good. He won that battle on Mitch Lloyd, which was that key matchup of the day. Kicked 2-3, but really should have had 4-1. They were all from set shots, maybe bar one, but they're all kickable opportunities. But he was still productive. Moved into the mid in the second quarter, also moved back into the last quarter, so he played everywhere on the day. Yeah. But it was good. He's got that versatility, Taro, so whilst accuracy wasn't his friend, he was also very productive and showed he's capable anywhere.
Just to touch on Asher Eatham as well, a really, really heartening to see him get the state combine invite. Yep. I know Gippy were really hoping he could produce a big performance just before champs or even during champs to be a late addition to the Vic Country squad. Unfortunately, it didn't quite happen. But yeah, he's obviously persisted and been really solid at Gippy level. So he gets his state combine invite, the full list on the AFL website. And yeah, we'll watch that with interest. But we'll move on to the next game now. And it was between Geelong and Bendigo. Bendigo challenged and they came hard, but it's been a little bit of a habit for them not quite getting it done when the game is there to be won, and Geelong just proved a little bit too good, Nathan.
Yeah, well, that's 9 in a row losses, that is, for Bendigo, which is very concerning with only 2 games to go. I think they finished with Tassie and Murray. So they're all 50-50 games, especially full strength, but not too much to harp on about over there at the moment. Toby Trevallia with 27 and a goal continues his good form, and 11 tackles. I mean, that is 4 better than the second best.
Yeah.
On the ground, tackle pressure was terrific from him. James Barrett, 21 and a goal. So good to see him continue. And Archer Day, weeks 1-2. So he's consistently hitting the scoreboard now, which is good in this back end of the year that he's found some really decent form moving to the back end.
Kyne Constable with 20 disposals as well, and he's a real tenacious player for them if they are going to win a final or two. He's one that actually plays an important role because his tackling is immense, and yeah, he's a real hard ball winner. The other one to mention for Bendigo, Lockie Hogan played on Cooper Ward. Cooper Ward's obviously been in good goal kicking form. He kicked the 2 straight, but was probably kept a little bit quieter than what we're used to seeing. And Joe Pike, 23 disposals, a goal, and 37 hitouts. We know Bendigo are often challenged in that ruck department, and he was able to take full advantage. Noah Tullio with the 18 disposals as well, and Zach McInnes was the one who kicked the winning goal. It's quite close in the last 3 or 4 minutes, but Zach McInnes extended the margin beyond a goal with about 90 seconds to go to break Bendigo hearts. We'll move on to the Murray versus Dandenong clash now. Dandenong, this was a real thumping, 15-11-101 to 6-8-44, and probably a little bit of a surprise in terms of margin. Murray are usually quite competitive up at Wangaratta, but weren't able to ever look like winning that one. The clear player that we have to touch on is Alwood Peckett, 25 disposals and 5 goals. So he spent a fair bit of time up forward and, yeah, really capitalised. 7 shots on goal. And we've now seen him play on all 3 lines for Dandenong throughout the season. And he's been really impressive, 9 marks and 8 tackles as well. So it was a really well-rounded performance. And he's got a little bit of X factor about him. And there is starting to become some hype about him. So 2 best on ground performances in a row. And the difference between his game last week was it was in pouring rain and he was able to play that real rugged game, whereas on the weekend he was able to show that flair a little bit more, which was good to see. Sam Toner, the late list addition for Dandenong, continues producing 3 goals, just makes the most of his opportunities. 3 goals from 3 shots, 9 disposals. Harry Doughton, if Alwood Peckett's been the best on for Dandenong in the last couple of weeks, Harry Doughton's probably been the second best on for them in each of those weeks. He spent some time on Joe Berry in the midfield, and he also kicked 16 disposals and a goal. His ball use as good as it has been all season, is the reports coming out of that game. And Cooper Hines, 28 disposals and 3 goals as well. So he continues on his outstanding form. From a Murray perspective, Max Marnie was probably their best. And then Matt Whitlock, 24 disposals as well. Jack Whitlock with the 5 shots on goal.
Well, I digress just quickly because I never went to my question at the start, but it relates now. Who was the best who was the best team in this APS absent period during that period? Who do you reckon was the best team?
I think pretty comfortably Calder was the one that was able to really stamp their authority. And after a tough start to the season, they obviously had to play the Sandy Dragons and that sort of thing. They've been really hard to beat and they just find a way to win. And it's often those unheralded players like your Pat Seds and these types, Noah Scotts, who did miss out on getting that Vic Metro call up, who have really tried to stake their claim at Coates League level. So I'd say Calder pretty comfortably.
Hard to disagree. I'd give Dandenong as my second. They're in good form. They're in scary form.
Yeah, well, because they lost their first 2 games of the season. Yeah. And since then, they've only lost another 2. One of those was down in Tassie. We know how hard Tassie are to beat in Tassie. And one of those was to the premiership favourites in Sandy. So and that was only by 8 points. So yeah, a good record. But yeah, we'll move on to the other team that's been in good form in Calder, and they did go down to Tassie and came away with the win 12-9-81 to 9-5-59. And Nash King, it's good to see him back to his ball winning and tenacious best, 31 disposals and 4 tackles after not getting the midfield minutes we perhaps would have liked to have seen at Metro level, given how deep they did bat in there. But yeah, he's been good since he's gone back to Calder. And Damon Hollow up forward again for the second consecutive week, showing what he can do, 4 goals and 15 disposals.
Bottom age Jack Miller for Tassie kicked 3 goals in the end. Jane Newen kicked 2 for Calder, which I find interesting. I would have loved to watch this game if it didn't clash with others we were at, because it looked like quite a good one in the end. Lenny Douglas, a goal and 11 touches. Connellin with 15 and a goal as well. Max Roney finished in the end with 31 touches, so pretty big day out for him. And Oscar Van Dam as well, 20 touches and 11 tackles, so providing the pressure. It'll be a pretty big difference maker, I reckon, in finals to have that extra element. And they're currently sitting third, so they won't have that top spot. It's not looking like they will going into the back end like they usually used to. But that wraps it up for the boys this week. I'll run through the ladder quickly. I'll go conference by conference. Metro, it's Calder, Sandy, Eastern, Northern, Western, Oakley. Calder are a game ahead of Sandy, but all they have to keep doing is winning and they will win the minor premiership. Well, that's not true. Not the minor premiership for everything. Geelong are first on percentage, but locked with Calder. And country, Geelong, Dandy, Tassie, Gippy, Murray, GWV and Bendigo with 2 games remaining each. And we'll obviously do our finals predictions when it gets to there. But we'll now move into the girls.
And we'll start with the Young Guns versus the Oakley Chargers game, which was the showpiece event on the girls' calendar this weekend from a Victorian perspective. So the Young Guns team was made up of players who just missed Metro or Country and are still sort of in that upper bracket of the Talent League players. It was good to see them showcase their weapons against the competition's benchmark in Oakley. Oakley did get the win, but there were a few Young Guns who really showed what they could do. Olivia Costello, I thought, was really composed and hard at it in the midfield, and it comes off the back of really strong form for the Western Jets. She's been really good for them. Kate Terry was also quite good in the midfield, quite clean, and she's been in strong form for the Dandenong Stingrays, playing that exact role as well. And Mary Robinson up on the wing, only her second game on the wing. She's usually up forward for the Northern Knights, but she was really clean, she was athletic, and her follow-up efforts for a taller player were quite impressive. And every time she got the ball, she had an air of class about her. So they were probably the main standouts for me. Mackenzie Bourne and Hayley Peck, both quite imposing in the ruck and able to go forward and kick a goal each as well.
Yeah, I mean, we had pretty similar thoughts in the end. I don't know if it was the best game to really showcase this talent against the best team in the competition who have played together all year. I don't know if that was the right move in the end. But yeah, I'd agree with Olivia Costello, and she's one we wanted to keep an eye on given her recent Talent League form. But she's pretty productive. Her efficiency in the midfield was there, and she's able to get a lot of offensive penetration with her kicks and get it moving forward really well. And I agree with Hayley Peck. She's been really productive for the Falcons, and I thought she was able to show it on the weekend. Do you reckon any of these girls have really pushed their stocks up a lot? That was kind of the question I left with. Did this game actually give these girls the opportunity compared to where the boys' Young Guns, it feels like there's a bit more there?
There isn't as much probably in the girls, you're right. But I think the one that really just caught my eye is Mary Robinson. Her frame, she looks like a really good player, and also she was able to perform against the competition's best. So she was probably the big one that I came out of there thinking, wow, okay. And she's only played a couple of games on the wing. She's usually up forward. So yeah, I thought she was really impressive. Cameron Buck's probably the other one to touch on, who won plenty of the ball as well. From an Oakley perspective, Maggie Marnie went down with what looks like it'll be a medium-term collarbone injury, unfortunately. That was the real sour note of this game. That obviously it was a showcase game, and it didn't necessarily mean anything for these Oakley girls. And she obviously emerged with a injury, so that was unfortunate. Sarah Pousty was quite good. Emma McDonald took lots of marks inside 50. She was probably the best on ground. And Amy Carras-Brett, I thought, played that wing role to perfection, as she has done for so long for the Oakley Chargers. We'll get into the girls' fixture. You watch GWV and Gippy battle it out. And Gippy were far too good. I think they kicked 5 goals in the last 10 minutes of the first quarter, and that basically gave them the upper hand for the rest of the day.
Yeah, well, it was a game of kind of the goal kickers for Gippy. That was where the contest was won and lost. They kicked 5 goals to none in the first quarter, which pretty much just set them up to cruise from there. Although the Rebels were really good after quarter time, I thought it was, and it was 4-3 after quarter time. So it was a bit more of a battled contest. I'll touch on Rebels just one main girl, which was Maggie Johnson, who I thought was terrific with her offensive output. She was just commanding the footy and really taking the game on. Just, I thought, lifted them when they needed to be lifted. And Isabella Davies was good again. But back to Gippy. Ella Stoddart with 3 goals. Ava Desch with 3 goals. Found it in similar ways, where it was just deep in the forward line, were able to get their hands on it really strong, and they were competitive beasts. I thought one of Alice Stoddard's goal was a 50-meter, I think, so was an easier type of goal. But, yeah, like you said, Ava Desch, it felt like if she wasn't scoring a goal, she was setting one up. So it was a productivity in that way. Ash Centra, yeah, you know what you're getting with her, 23-2. There's nothing to add there. Mia Smith-Clark, I really liked her game, 2 goals and 11 touches, but was able to push up as well and was really nifty and crafty, I thought, with the ball in hand. Loved the way she went about it. And Acacia Sutton as well up forward was really impactful with the 2 goals, 17 touches, and Jazz Soudan continued her good streak of footy with a goal and 19.
Yeah, certainly. Rebecca Fitzpatrick didn't play that game, but she's one that's been in really good form from all reports for the Gippy Power. But does that just about wrap up that game?
Yeah, it sure does. I'll let you move to East and Western, which was not too pretty, with Eastern winning 122-22, exact 100-point winners. They are the first team to finish for the year before finals. They are the first team on 13 games played. They cannot finish first. So Oakley have officially won the minor premiership, but Eastern are on 40 with them at the moment.
Yeah, so I think the standouts for me in this game were Isabel Creighton. She finished with 20 disposals and 4 marks, but felt like every time the Western got a little bit of ascendancy, and Western were missing a lot of their players to the young guns game, it should be noted as well.
Yeah.
And Eastern have obviously got the depth to cover the likes of Mackenzie Bourne that was missing and these sorts. But every time Western did get a little bit of momentum, she seemed to intercept it, whether it was an intercept mark or an intercept possession, and she was really calm in defence. And Asha Fern-Wannan, a double bottom major, was really good as well. She moves really athletically and she's got a bit of speed and she's very clean overhead. So those were the two standouts to really lock the ball inside 50 for the Eastern Rangers. Grace Ballany is really rocketing up draft boards. I reckon she'd be in the first round now. 29 disposals and 3 goals. She's gotten better and better as the season's gone on, and it was another one of those outstanding performances from her. Georgia Knight with the 4 goals. Kelsey Turns kicked the 5 goals. So they were the real beneficiaries inside 50. Both of them kicking goals in different ways, crafty, up forward, and able to snap through different types of more difficult opportunities, which was impressive to see. Zoe Vozzo, 14 disposals and 2 goals, was good in the midfield. And Georgie Brisbane felt like she had more than the one goal. She had the 4 shots on goal and was a real marking presence and barometer for Eastern inside 50 as well. Stacia Stevenson and Geordie Allen. It was a real day for Eastern to show their weapons, and everyone was able to come to the party at some point in the match. From a Western Jets perspective, I thought Alex McBride alone was quite good and showed why she's one that has a lot of people excited about her for next year. Sierra Greaves and Sasha Nelson, a couple of others that were reasonably productive on the day. But that just about rounds that game out, Nathan.
Well, Eastern and Western are 90% going to play each other again in the wildcard round, so hopefully Western can just get a few back and hopefully produce a bit more of a competitive showing and hopefully not have that result again. But Dandy beat Murray. Before I move into this, just want to say congratulations to Gemma Ramsdale, who got picked up by GWS's AFLW team. She was obviously in Dandy Non's program last year, but good to see her play some good footy at Collingwood's VFL and get that opportunity at AFLW level. So it shows that there's always a second chance, even if you don't make it in your draft year. But Dandenong got the job done, 7-6-48 to Murray's 1-5-11. So Murray's still without a win. They've got one more opportunity left against Bendigo. In the final round, Ali Hall was superior for Murray with 31 touches and 5 tackles. Holly Egan, 25 touches as well, and Rose Bell with 17. So it feels like those three are really lifting each week and really providing some terrific efforts. Kayla Dalgleish with 26 for the Rays. Gemma Reynolds, 24. So they actually won a little less of the ball, especially their main ball winners, but were just still a bit more clinical with it, which was the main thing. And that was really the difference in the end. I'll let you touch on a few of the goal kickers.
Yeah, Nalu Brothwell. I mean, the main one, I think, having the breakout performance. There's been so much excitement about her and Sister Mizuki around the Stingrays. And, yeah, good to see Nalu produce that real breakout performance. So 14 disposals, 4 goals and the 9 tackles. So a really rounded game. She kicked her goals in different ways. There were a couple from set shots, a couple from open play. But she just moved so smoothly. And you wouldn't know it's just her second season of footy at any level. So probably the main one to touch on from a Dandenong perspective is it's good to see her really showcasing her weapons. And then on debut, Josie Brent kicked the 2 goals as well. So they were the main performers from Dandenong who, yeah, just kicked the 7 goals on the day, which we probably expected them to maybe win by more, which is a sign of Murray's real grit, which is good to see. But we'll move on to Tassie's win over Calder. They were able to get the job done 7-12-54 to 2-3-15. From a Tassie perspective, you have to start with Priya Bowring. Yeah, she's been very strong throughout the championships, but this took her footy to the next level. 47 disposals and a goal, as well as 6 tackles for Priya Bowring, who, yeah, we know how hungry she is when she's at the contest and how good she's around the footy. But, yeah to have the cleanliness and hunt around the stoppage to win that much of the footy, really impressive. And she's a good ball user as well when she does get it in space. So, yeah, good to see her play well. Misha Barwin with the 22 and Ava Reid, 2 goals, 4, but was a constant threat inside 50 for the Tassie Devils. Grace as a party in defence was quite strong for Calder with the 24 disposals, and Maddie Albrecht combined her speed, her ball use and her pressure, 24 disposals and 15 tackles.
Geelong and Bendigo in a good shootout, which is good to see. 77-55, the Falcons got the job done there, and Ava Bibby kicked 5 goals from 7 touches, which I don't know what the math is for 5 divided by 7, that's efficiency at its finest there from her. And Sasha White as well with the 4 goals. Good to see her producing some really good footy at the back end of the year, because I feel like she's one that can really slide under the radar in this draft, because she's got that real X factor. She's dangerous inside 50. Mika Morrissey with 2 goals as well. And as well for the Falcons, Brody Mitchell, who stands at 0 centimetres on the talent league cap, but she's a bottom major for the Falcons. She kicked 3 goals in the end. And for the Pioneers, yes, as I said, Ava Bibby, 5 goals. Lucia Painter with a goal and 14 touches. So quite a day for her. Lavinia Cox with 15 touches and Jamaica Douglas with 20 touches and 11 tackles. So I'll quickly run through the girls' ladder before we'll touch on some of the state league performances for the boys. But Oakley, unless they lose to Sandy by about 200 points, they've pretty much locked up the minor premiership. They're locked on points with Eastern. So Metro's Oakley, Eastern, Northern, Sandy, Western and Calder, and the country conference is really tight. The top 4 is officially set. The order is not. So Tassie, Gympie, Dandy and Geelong will all be locked in for quarterfinal action. Rebels, Bendigo and Murray sit below them, but thought now I'd move to some state league performances. I got lucky enough to watch Job Shanahan and Luca Grego at Rookie Me Central, and those articles are on our stories, and just go to Rookie Me Central if it's gone by the time this comes out. But I want to touch on a few, 2 of these boys and the way they played. I know you're a big fan of Luca Grego. Were you happy with what you read in the end?
Yeah, right. Happy with what I read, happy with what I heard. Yeah, 13 disposals, 3 intercept marks. His pressure was really good and he looked to take it on by foot. So you want to see someone come into a state league environment and have real confidence and show their weapons. And it sounds like he did that. I'll let you speak a little bit more to what he did, though. It was a pretty calm day out at Willie, which you don't often say, I think. So that was good to see. And it was a loss for Williamstown to North Melbourne, and I think he spent some time on Cooper Harvey. But, I'll let you lead the way with how he played.
Yeah, he was pretty good. That aggressiveness, that cleanliness definitely translated at the senior level. There was no doubt about that. I thought he was consistently looking to be aggressive with his play. He was quite defensively minded in the first quarter, but as the game went on, his mindset changed. He was providing good run. I don't think he was rewarded enough, to be honest. The amount of times he was running on the outside but just wasn't given that handball. But he's drawing out a player to come to him, and that ball carrier's got a bit more space in front of him. His tackle pressure was elite. His cleanliness by hand was terrific. His ability at times to move through 2 players and get through and get off a clean handball was terrific. The only downside of his game that I picked up was at a few times his transition running just let his opponent get too far out to the point where he wasn't able to recover that distance that was made up.
Yep.
He gave away a goal from a dangerous tackle, but it's like, you know, you can forgive those sometimes where it wasn't like malice. It was just too strong.
And he's a rugby background. Of course he's going to do that.
Yeah, so, but it was really productive in the end. I thought he played his role really well. He didn't stand out in a bad way at all. He was really productive, suited his, just a role player, but I thought elevated his game to make sure his efficiency was so good in the end.
Just to close out on Luke McGregor, I think you see, and we have seen so many players from the Talent League play VFL, as you do every year, but often it can be quite difficult to come in. One, because of the physicality, but two, because there is quite an offensive-minded, I don't want to say selfish, but that real want to show your weapons at Talent League level and in the talent pathway, and you're really encouraged to do that. In a State League program, it's all about winning and the results and that sort of thing. So it can be quite hard to translate, particularly if you're a player who has been one of your best players at your Talent League club and you're coming in and you're the 23rd player on limited minutes, but he's the sort of role player that just feed in seamlessly because, like you say, he just does what's expected of him and doesn't try to do too much and doesn't have certainly does have that selflessness about him as well. So good to see him get the opportunity, and hopefully he stays and plays a couple more games for Williamstown, as I understand is a possibility, and that game certainly gives them the ammunition to keep him in the side. But Job Shanahan, another strong performer, 4 goals and clean hands overhead, one day after his 18th birthday, so a good present for him.
It was 4 goals. He was the leading goal kicker on the day for Essendon. I thought his performance was quite good given he really had no right to be as dominant in the end. I mean, he had a forward line with Peter Wright, Vigo Vicentini and a Todd Goldstein at times. Like, that's going to win you a gold medal at the basketball at the Olympics.
Yeah, literally,
high.
Yeah.
So, and I was watching it and I'm just thinking, like, obviously I knew the stats before he played, but I'm like, how is he even going to make an impact? Which he did struggle because that Preston City Oval's, you know, it's tiny. Like that inside 50 was really, really tight at times. And I don't think he was really able to show a lot of leading presence until right at the end. But he was super productive. I mean, he got his first goal from laying a good tackle. Oh, no, I think he got tackled, but won the free kick, was in the right spot. He only had the one touch at quarter time and it was one goal. So it was efficient to start. His goal in the second quarter was terrific. When he pushed up the ground, he got a bit more space in front of him, battled a, you know, a senior body one-on-one, took a contested mark, takes off and kicks it from 55. It bounces through. Like that's a really nice goal for a senior debut. And then struggled to really impose himself in the second half. I guess it was hard because he leaped at a lot of marking contest, but just couldn't hold it because there were so many hands around the footy with such a congested forward 50. And his final 2 goals came in the final 2 minutes, both the exact same goal where he led out from about 30 metres all the way to the 50 arc, ball was coming in transition, got his hands on it and kicked it from 45 just on different angles. Really nice set shots and 4 goals straight, so that's always good as well. The efficiency on his senior debut, so he was terrific. 2 good showings there. Kane Emery and Isaac Barry, Oakley Chargers boys, played for the Bull Ants on that day. Obviously couldn't keep a keen eye on them, but Kane Emery did have some moments in the forward half.
15 disposals and a goal, I think. Yeah. So, an impressive debut for the small pressure player.
And then Sam Marshall for the Lions had a good day out with 18 touches against Carlton's VFL. So that was the State League wrap, I guess, if you want to extend Leo Lombardo, 31 for Gold Coast as well, if we're pushing that far. So he's – and 3 goals, 31 and 3 goals or something like that. Unbelievable. We'll move now, last in – of the podcast, we've got the national championships, the final games for Vic Metro and Country, the girls this weekend. Excited to watch this doubleheader at RSCA Park on Sunday, and it's SA Metro. This is the grand final, unless WA, from memory, they have to beat Country and SA, which is unlikely that will happen. But this is pretty much the grand final for Metro. If Metro win, it's definitely over. But thought we'd just preview, look at what they're coming up against. Metro's task is extremely difficult. They do have the ability to match them, but we saw last year, I think they lost by 60 points and they were still competitive Metro. So it tells you how good SA are, but you've got the likes of India Rashid, Georgia McKee, Poppy Schultz, Charlotte Riggs, Jasmine Evans, Violet Patterson. Like, those are all top 30 players.
And the first 3 are probably top 10 players, arguably, as
100%.
Well.
100%. So it'd be interesting, the matchups there. Would like to see Soph Mackay on India Rashid. I think that would be a really fun matchup to watch. But both midfield battles, it will be interesting. I think where SA probably a little better than Metro is their transition game at the moment. Their set plays are phenomenal. Like, against the Allies, they move it up with ease. They understand where they all need to be for it to just click. So they make teams play against them truly, where you really have to watch them and you can't play your own game because of that. So it'll be interesting. I'd probably still lean towards SA at the moment. I think Metro have to really like be 100%. Like they can't drop off at all in that game. And WA play Vic Country, Zippy Fish, Molly O'Hare, Lily Patterson, three best for WA. They had a low scoring loss against Queensland. I think that'll be quite competitive, that game, but I think Vic Country can beat them. I do think the depth is better in Vic Country than it is for WA, but it'll be pretty competitive.
I think the one thing about Vic Country that I've probably underrated is just how well balanced the midfield is. Ash Centra, the star power and X Factor. Sarah Howley, the player who just gets to so many contests and just is so clean below her knees. And Lou Painter with the strength. That starting midfield is really formidable.
Sarah Howley in that mix as well. So they're dangerous and they're hard to beat. So excited to watch that this weekend, as well as the under 17s. Futures trials game. So that will all be next week on the podcast. So that is all for today. Thank you all for watching. Check out our socials for more, and we'll see you in the next episode.